right. And I just want to begin by saying music is like poetry and has a message. And history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definitions. And news can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, I'm asking each and every one of you in the Quest listenership audience to now pull back our musical curtain to see and hear the contributions of our diaspora. And you're sure to find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, indeed vibrations. So I want to thank all of the audience for joining us to hear a different perspective of our diaspora. Now, today we attempt to educate our audience on the challenges faced by African Americans who integrated into sports and other activities. Now, we examine who, when, and why this process actually took place. Now, one may beg to differ. Why would black people even want to integrate into sports? Well, that's another question that maybe we'll be able to answer during this particular segment. But I want to start out by prefacing this with the fact that the reason why I came up with this particular topic for today is because I was talking about skiers, black skiers and black ski clubs. And I hadn't any idea that black people wanted to ski and actually had ski clubs. Well, come to find out, by looking into the research, I found out that and researched one of the oldest black skiing clubs in America. And this is what led down the rabbit hole to racial disparities and segregation in sports. And so I want to begin by just starting out to just introduce the panelists that are here today. And we have a caller in, Farah from Florida. We have a lot to say about Florida, but we'll save that, right? Farah, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
All right. Thank you for joining us, right? In a moment, we'll have you back on to, issue us a statement or a comment. Mr. Davis, the Black Librarian, good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon, rather. I'm sorry.
Okay. And I just want to remind everybody there's always morning someplace in the world. And I'm honored to have Jia Jia Shakur. Jia Jia, good morning. Jia Jia, good morning. Okay. So let me begin. I know Jia Jia is there on the line, right? And I want to remind everybody to kind of like mute yourselves for the background noise if you have any at all. So just to talk about skiers, almost 89% of skiers surveyed were all white, and almost 6% were Asian or Pacific Islanders, and 5 or 6% were Latino, and less than 1% were American Indian and Alaskan Native. When you ask yourself, well, what are blacks, what blacks are skiing? Well, a black run with the heaviest, hardest rating you can find in Europe, beating green, blue, and red, the top position, and is only suitable for advanced skiers. Okay, in order to ski, it's very expensive. Also, it's very expensive to even, pursue that as a particular sport. And that includes hockey as well, right? And so that being said, I want to, okay, that was Jia Jia Shakur in the background. I'm going to let you start off, the Black Librarian. Tamir, what do you think about the racial disparities in sports to get, especially with so many black people repping so many different teams.
But one of the things that I would like to point out in terms of the racial disparity, there's a great example of a person who actually from New Jersey who was very impactful in terms of sports and entertainment, all aspects of entertainment, music, and what have you. This beloved brother is the late Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson was one of the first, one of the first African Americans to play for NFL. Actually, Fritz Pollard was the first. Fritz Pollard was at one point an NFL lead coach, and he actually mentored and influenced Paul Robeson, and actually have him work with him when he allowed him to play on an NFL team called Akron. There was different teams during that time, and if you go as far back as the NFL actually was that came out as far back as 1920, 1922. At one point, it was called the American Football League or what have you. Then it later became the NFL. But if you look at what Paul Robeson had to go through while being on the team, in a lot of ways he was marginalized. He went through a lot of fights, a lot of different political and physical fights sometimes, whereby he had to fight his way on the team. We wasn't seen as being valued in that way, although – you know, his great talent in terms of singing, his great talent as an athleticist, his great talent as a mind. While he was playing professional basketball, he also went to, at one time he was admitted to NYU, and he felt more comfortable going up into Harlem based on the Harlem scene, what was happening during the Harlem Renaissance, and he later attended Columbia University. But this is an example of how disparaged blacks were and marginalized from mainstream society in terms of football. Football is one aspect. There's so many. There's a plethora of different examples of how we've been marginalized. So much so when you look at the housing ownership, even in New Jersey, in certain townships, it was written in the ordinance whereby African Americans were not allowed to buy and or own homes. We was marginalized from any aspect of ownership, not just in this particular state, but in many other states, if you look at the antiquated ordinances in the books. So, and also, in addition to being an intellectual prowess, in addition to into being a great actor, a well-known actor, pretty much a polyglot in so many regards, he was still challenged and being able to move forward. And also, he was marginalized and ostracized based on his political activities, his the way in which he wanted to move and progressively forward, move black progressively forward in the nation. So there were so many different reasons why they did not want us in those particular areas, in sports, entertainment, music, so on and so forth. And reading about, if you look at the entertainment, a lot of African Americans did not have ownership of their intellectual property in terms of music. But one of the great examples of an African American have ownership of their intellectual property is Jane Wilson Johnson. Jane Wilson Johnson had actually owned the intellectual property in different aspects of ASCAP publishing as far back as in the 1920s. So,
okay, I need you to hold on. Right, because, you know, being the librarian in the house, you are a wealth of information. But I want to bring in Jah Jah Shakur, right, and see if he has a comment. Now, you may ask, you know, well, like much of society, professional American sports were segregated in the first part of the 20th century, preventing black athletes from competing with white athletes. Now, in baseball, there was an established Negro League for non-white players, predominantly African American, and there were also Latin Americans playing in the league as well. Into the 50s, the National Basketball League officially integrated in 1950, while professional football started with the integration from 1900 to 1930, still the percentage of African-American players was very low, if any. The National Football League was completely segregated from 34 to 1945. Now, the degree to which the degrading segregation policies hurt black communities and inside and outside of sports is immense, and not simply in the past. Some of these policies still exist today. And that being said, I want to bring on Ja Ja Shakur. Ja Ja, good morning.
Good afternoon.
I always say it's morning.
Hello?
Someplace in the world. Take it away.
Yesterday.
I know. Hey, man, you can hear me?
Yeah.
Getting tall. You can hear me, Bay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hello?
Chime in with your comment.
Okay, yes, I just went to a quiet area. Yes. So the historical narrative that you gave us today and the before speaker, that was Tamar Davis?
Yes.
Yes, was right on point. That historical narrative is an actual fact. One thing we have to understand as Africans in America, that slavery was an economic system that was justified by racism and white supremacy. And we still live in that same economic paradigm still to this day, where cash is king and now credit is queen. So when you're looking at finances, you're looking at capitalism, sports play a major role in that. It's a multi-billion dollar, probably even a trillion dollar a year industry in terms of ownership of not just intellectual property, but ownership of real estate where these stadiums are at. So we as Africans in America have always been a talent since our very enslavement in America all the way up to economic enslavement, which still continues to this day under the system of capitalism. And once we understand that America is based off of commerce and these sports players and these entertainers are just pawns in a game of a system of commercialism, commerce, and capitalism, we must understand how to play that game. And how you play that game is ownership of intellectual property, but also ownership of, you know, some of these particular industries that are in the sports, as such as security and sports business and sports medicine and sports management. It's still segregated. They just want us to be players, but we understand on how to boss up and pool our resources to take seizure of some of these industries that's included in the sports industry. Then we could become more financially lucrative, not just as owners of these sports teams, which most of these sports teams are owned by rich European males, but we can have ownership of the industries that reside within the sports industry. I've been doing a lot of research over this and teaching students in my travel in reference to the business of sports. That's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's a multi-million dollar industry just cleaning toilets in these stadiums, doing security, concessions. I used to work at NJPAC, as well as the Prudential Center in North New Jersey. That's a multi-million dollar industry, concessions and real estate and dealing with cleaning the places up. So we have to get into these industries and realize that we have to have ownership of not just, you know, our intellectual property, but have ownership by creating our own companies, our own LLCs, and seize power that way. Because in terms of these particular industry of the sports industry, is still segregated from a financial standpoint, but we take ownership of our, you know, of some of these industries that's included in the sports industry, we could become more financially lucrative, not just as sports players and entertainers, but as business owners in these industries.
Okay. All right. I want to bring on Farah Ill from Florida. Farah, I'd like for you to share with us right now a comment or a question that you might have as it pertains to our topic today. Farah. You might have to unmute yourself if you muted yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, Farah, do you have a question or a comment? I can't hear you. You're breaking up. Okay. So now, Farah, on your end, you're not coming in clear at all. Like, I don't know if you have to stand in a certain spot or whatever. I don't know what's going on. Right. Still can't hear you. All right. So for time's sake, we're going to try to come back to you, right? Okay, for time's sake, we're going to try to come back to you, Farah. Right now, we can't hear you at all, right? So I want to go back to the Black Librarian. You know, Dja Dja Shakur brought up some very important points when we talk about actually participating in these sports as a fan or participating in it as a player. But on the fringes, there is a business in sports that has allowed the dominant society, predominantly white people, to take advantages of the financial aspect in this capitalistic society that we live in. And it's one that we haven't had a chance to actually, you know, you talk about integrating into sports. Well, you know, let's talk about integrating into the sports business. And Dja Dja brought that to the surface. And, you know, indeed, we can just talk about that as a whole nother topic. But I did cut you off, Mr. Davis. So I'd like for you to chime back in and kind of, you know, begin to make a point and not just give information. Go ahead, Mr. Davis, take it away.
Well, I would say this, right? Is when we look at Paul Robeson, for example, right? Paul Robeson, who actually expounds upon the industry being engaged in unconditional institutional racism. The unconditional institutional racism is something that existed for the inception of this country. It was part of the cultural hegemony of this country. It was something that allowed the Europeans that came into this country to be a controlling mechanism and take land and resources and what have you. We have to look at the way in which they see things. Not only was Paul Robeson a polyglot and a scholar, but Paul Robeson, and this is to be understood, was a lawyer, a damn good lawyer. Graduated from Columbia Law School. And so we have to begin to look at this in its realest sense, that the most important piece on the chessboard is not the king and or queen. It's the board in of itself. All those different pieces are pieces of the board. And so when we look at how the cultural hegemony exists and how it engages itself with economic determinism, they control the board and the players on the board. And they have a great sense of confidence and or arrogance to feel as if they're entitled to do so, because there's a philosophy that's been developed, a concept to where we are less than. In the Constitution of the United States of America that was actually developed, 1776, which was ratified 27 times, Each time it was ratified, it never had taken out the fact that we are whole. When it was written, we was considered three-fifths of a man, subhuman. So this goes into, and this is ingrained in the social fabric of America, in the social fabric of America, in the way in which that America governs itself as a nation. So what I'm saying is, in the beginning, there's a grave sense of immorality in the Constitution in and of itself.
Okay. All right. Let me get Ja Ja Shakur back in here. And it seems like we lost for Ra'il from down in Florida. His signal just completely dropped. Ja Ja, you just heard the comments made. We got about 8 minutes left to the show. Chime in with a comment, question. Take it away, Ja Ja.
Yes, what Tamora is saying, once again, is the actual fact. See, I have a hip-hop spirit, and my hip-hop spirit is that we don't care who controls the chessboard. We're going to mob up. We're going to seize power on that chessboard, no matter who controls that chessboard. Yeah, the Constitution, as well, all of that is right. But we're going to mob up. We're going to go. Look what Rich Paul did, man. Rich Paul, Rich Paul seized power. This is a guy who they tried to ban him from coming in into the sports agency world. And he's like, forget that. You know what I mean? I know I could get one of the greatest basketball players on the planet, LeBron James. He became an agent. They had to change the whole game. They got a law in the book called the Rich Paul Law, where now you have to take the sports agent license now to get into sports agency. But before then, you can have a high school diploma. This dude didn't even graduate from college. He's a billionaire right now. So that's just an individual, you know what I mean? But in terms of what he's supplying with jobs and the whole concept is that he didn't allow that system to block him out. He knew that he was a sports agent. He knew they could teach other people to become sports agents. And he got a whole team and teaching young people on how to get into the sports business in the NBA. So, yes, we have these blockages and we have this, you know, this conflict of a system that's called racism and white supremacy, but we as Africans in America have never allowed that to be a paradigm to get us frazzled where we cannot, you know, go seize power and mob up. So, for me personally, as I study this system of capitalism and racism, it is a reality, but that reality is not my reality, and that's not a reality that I think that, you know, we as a people should accept as our reality. We just got to look at it for what it is, and we got to go seize power for what we got to seize power for, because if we don't, we're going to continue to be behind the eight ball. We're going to continue to get exploited by the system that continues to perpetuate it, and then we have our own people who perpetuate it. I mean, there's a great book out called $40 Million Slaves that deal with this in terms of the athletes, but from the business standpoint, if we come in it from a business standpoint and stop looking at people to accept us and to love us and to care for us, we can't care about that. You know what I mean? We got to care that we love ourselves. Are we going to get what we got to get so our children and our children's children could, you know, inherit something, you know, that's more than what we inherited. You know, so I just feel as though that, you know, racism is a reality, white supremacy is a reality, but it has never stopped us as Africans in America. And as long as we continue to, you know, unite around these principles of seizing power, I think we could see some power in these sports industries and, you know, in the entertainment business as well, but we have to look at it from a business standpoint, not look at it from a moral, ethical standpoint, because these people are not moral, nor are they ethical, but we have to be with each other and seize the power that we have to seize so that we could obtain some of this power that, you know, that we need to seize and obtain for ourselves.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I want to give Mr. Davis an opportunity to respond to that. Mr. Davis, a response.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I was in the days
yes.
at this point now. I was looking at pictures of Paul Robeson. And now while I was looking at pictures of Paul Robeson, I'm sitting back thinking, mm-hmm. and while reading about his past, all that he had went through, the fight to get on the football team when the whites didn't want him there, his mentor, Fitch Pollard, making sure that he actually stays and steadfast and do what he needs to do, not just for himself, but for his race and the collective of people and the children's children that we'll see will come next. So when I think about what he went through, it's just a lot. And this is just one story. He lived to be 77 years old. He went through it as far back as 1898 when he was born. Father fought to be able to go to Lincoln University to graduate and actually ran away, was a runaway slave and ended up at Lincoln University and made sure he took care of his family. So we're talking about years and years and years of those type of stories with millions of people that came over into this country that was unconditionally franchised still to this day. Still to this day.
Okay. So
it's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. However, Jia Jia Shakur brought to bear that even without a high school diploma, with all the things that you know, instead of focusing on what we don't have, seize the moment and take advantage. You know, as we wrap up the show with only 3 minutes left, Mr. Davis, and Jia Jia Shakur had to be on his way, I'm reminded of the perseverance that it has taken for African Americans to plow their way through the redlining system of segregation and housing and all aspects. And the fact that the gentlemen's agreements that were made behind the scenes to actually keep wealth out of the hands of Black or African Americans in this country, we cannot ignore. But at the same time, during integration and segregation, we found the resources within ourselves to still overcome and persevere, to overcome adversity through our activism and through our collective bonding amongst each other and the will to say, to never say we can't, but we can. And with that being said, right, I want to give you a final word, Mr. Davis, and I want to thank you for participating. And final word.
My final word is we will not stop. We're going to keep standing and keep standing. And when we feel as if we can't stand no more, we're going to stand up some more. We're going to keep standing, and we're going to keep fighting to make sure that we can push through this for ourselves, our children's children, and their children. Forward thinking.
Okay.
Forward thinking.
Right. Right. I love it. I love it. We want to thank the audience for chiming in and tuning in and checking us out. I want to thank the panelists, Jia Jia Shakur, Farrah Ill, Mr. Tamir Davis, and myself, Dr. Richard Bombay, and more importantly, you, the audience, for taking the time to listen. And please share the inspiration and the perseverance to still move on actively, collectively, as a unit. We can. Yes, we can. All right. And that's a wrap. I just want to finally say, Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio.
Radio show. The best. Thanks. Thanks, sister.